Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Once again, to talk about Joshi Pro Wrestling, I'm Aaron Bentley. I'm joined by my co-host, Taylor Mainberg. What's up, Taylor?
Hey, how's it going? It's quite a time to be recording a podcast, let me say that.
That's right. We are in well, we're not in isolation. I don't think either of us is symptomatic at this point. But, you know, we're in quarantine. We are watching a lot of Joshi. I don't know, what are you doing to kind of pass the time, Taylor?
I'm watching a lot of wrestling, as you mentioned, watching a lot of movies that I've been putting off that have been building up as I don't have time and I usually prioritize watching wrestling first. But now I have plenty of time watching a lot of movies, been watching a lot of opera, actually. The Met Opera is putting up free operas on their website, so I've been checking those out because I'm a fan of opera.
I did not know that about you. I knew you were a theater fan, but I didn't know you were an opera fan.
Yes, I'm a theater person, and a few years back, I got into opera. They're very similar, so it was sort of an easy hobby to gain.
Well, you were talking about movies. We watched last night Uncut Gems. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen Uncut Gems yet because every year I watch all the films nominated for the Oscars, so I didn't see Uncut Gems initially, figuring it would be nominated. And then it was not nominated, so I haven't seen it, but it's on my list to watch.
Okay, well, we can't talk about it then, but it's very good. That's all I was going to say.
I've heard only good things about it, which, you know, I really should get on it and watch it.
You should. We're going to talk about a lot of Joshi on this show, as we did on the first episode. Thanks, everyone, who listened to the first episode. We really appreciate it. Appreciated the feedback that we got from some folks. Thanks for coming back for episode 2. And if it's your first episode listening, welcome. We're going to talk on this episode about the Stardom Cinderella Tournament. We're going to be previewing that. We're going to talk about Ice Ribbon's Corcoran shows from March 14th and February 24th. We've got an update. Well, we got the brackets for the Joshi Rookie Tournament we talked a little bit about last time. We're still going to run down in our Spark Notes section some smaller shows that we watched, give you our recommended matches since the last episode occurred, and talk about the shows that are coming up. So it's going to be jam-packed. Before we get into it, I want to remind you to follow us on Twitter at JBombAudio. Basically, the idea of the Twitter account is just going to be keeping the freshest news up there, you know, retweeting stuff. I think we'll probably have some takes occasionally. We haven't done much of that yet. Do you have any other ideas of what we're going to do with the Twitter account, Taylor?
No, I think you're about right. Adding the news, just so people are... There's a lot of disparate sources for news in the Joshi world. It can be sometimes difficult to know if you're getting all the news that's happening from any one source or multiple sources. So we're going to try and be that one-stop shop of getting you the big news of whatever's going on. And then, you know, as you mentioned, we didn't do it, but I'm sure one of us will probably hop on sooner rather than later for some live thoughts as we watch through some shows.
Yes, maybe I will get up at 5:30 a.m. on Tuesday to watch the Cinderella Tournament. It's highly unlikely that I'm going to do that, for the record. But follow us on Twitter anyway, JBombAudio. You can find me at Aaron Like the Car. Taylor is at TAMAIMBO. Make sure you're subscribing to the show so you get these episodes every other week as soon as they come out. Give us a rating and review if you're using the Apple Podcast app. And if you are feeling, I don't know, generous during this quarantine time, you can go over to redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio and give a donation. This is not a Patreon. You don't get anything for it. It just, you know, you'll feel a little better about yourself, perhaps. So, I have noticed, Taylor, that one thing helping with the quarantine is, I guess since Stardom hasn't been able to run many shows over the past couple of months, they've been spending a lot of time fixing their the back catalog that they lost at one point on Stardom World.
Yeah, so like a lot of promotions during this time when they're not running a lot of shows, Stardom has been uploading some old shows of theirs, mainly from 2016. Stardom World actually started out as a paid YouTube channel back when that was a possibility, and you know, companies could have people subscribe to their YouTube channel for a certain amount of money a month. Stardom did it. Nico also very briefly had a paid YouTube channel. And then Stardom moved to a different service, and then actually I think moved again to a different streaming service. And so the back catalog of Stardom shows has not been complete on Stardom World. It still isn't, although as I said, they've uploaded quite a few shows from 2016. I actually looked at all of those shows. I had just started the year before watching Stardom in 2016, so I have a few recommended matches. If you've been seeing Stardom uploading these shows but you don't know where to start, or you don't want to go through all the shows every match, I have a couple of suggestions. They actually haven't uploaded a few other 2016 shows where I have a few other recommended matches. If those end up getting uploaded, I will retweet those on our Twitter account and point out the really big matches. But I have three matches from 2016 that you should definitely check out. The first one is from March 21st, 2016. It's a tag match, Thunder Rock, which is Io Shirai and Mayu Iwatani, their great tag team, against Kairi Hojo and Meiko Satomura. Go and check that one out. Another Thunder Rock, great Thunder Rock match is from April 2nd, 2016, almost 4 years to the day. Thunder Rock against Hiroyo Matsumoto and Kagetsu, who just retired, so a chance to look back a bit on her career. And then the third one from 2016 is a singles match between the two members of Thunder Rock, Io Shirai versus Mayu Iwatani, from Stardom Gold on May 15th, 2016. And if that doesn't quite fill you up, also a 2017 recommendation, Toni Storm, now of NXT UK, versus Io Shirai from the same Stardom Gold show in 2017. That was May 14th, 2017. So definitely check out those matches if you like them. Check out some of the other shows and keep your eyes peeled as they continue to hopefully fill out this back catalog. And hopefully one day we will have a complete back catalog of Stardom shows.
I'm hoping that, I don't know, feels like there's a ton to talk about every week or every other week, but I'm hoping that one of these days we'll be able to talk about some old Joshi at some point, older Joshi, I guess 2016 is not that long ago, but I hope we'll be able to dig into some of that on the show in the future.
Yes, I do too. So hopefully that will be part of the future plans of this podcast.
Well, as for modern Stardom, on March 24th, we've got the Stardom Cinderella Tournament. There was some real questions about if this, well, not really whether it was going to happen, but whether it was going to happen in front of fans. And we found out on March 20th that they're going to do this show with fans. I think it's going to be the same thing we're seeing at some other promotions where they're going to be checking temperatures as you come in. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, checking temperatures and also, I believe, giving away complimentary masks for everyone to wear. I think it's going to be a requirement. You see it sometimes anyway at shows, a lot of people wearing those sickness masks, but I believe it's going to be a requirement for everyone in attendance to have a mask.
I think they're giving you hand sanitizer too, so. And obviously telling people if you're having any symptoms to stay home. So we'll see how this goes. It's kind of weird, the situation in Japan. A lot of stuff closed for quite a while, but then a lot of wrestling just kept running. And now they seem to be kind of opening things back up. There's a lot of question about whether they're kind of slowing down their tests, and that's why it seems like the coronavirus is going down there. But I guess we're going to see how this affects everything, because basically open for business here pretty soon.
Yeah, that's the way it appears. It's a question of whether, as you just mentioned, what will happen if something happens to take another turn in the future. We don't know yet, but we sort of have to just play it by ear and wait and see.
All right, here's what we know about the Cinderella tournament for this year. I'm kind of bummed. I mean, I really enjoyed No People Gate, and so it would have been fun. Although, these kind of matches. So the Cinderella tournament is a one-day single elimination tournament. The winner gets a crown. They wear a dress, and basically they get a shot at a title is the idea. I think it's you get your wish granted, right? But almost always that's a title shot. So you got one bracket. You know, obviously the winners go on to face each other, and then you get down to one versus one. But they do it all in one day, so you get a whole lot of matches one day, Corcoran Hall. The general idea, at least as it seems to me, is that they take someone who is not quite at the super high level of the promotion just yet, and this is kind of a way to push them over the top. Would you agree with that idea about the general people who win this tournament?
Yes, definitely. I don't think you would see or you will see any current ace or top line wrestler winning this tournament. It definitely is used to boost up a wrestler who maybe is in the mid card or maybe heading up from the mid card and needs a little extra boost to get to that top level.
Last year we had Aris Ahoshki winning. The year before that was Hana Kimura. Or am I mixing those up? And the year before that was Momo Watanabe.
That's correct.
Okay. So let's go through all the matchups. Then we'll talk about kind of who we expect to win or some of these matchups, how we expect them to go. One thing I'll point out first is no Aris Ahoshki in this tournament. And not just because she's the white belt champion, because you will see that Mayu Iwatani is in this tournament. We did hear at the No People Gate show that she couldn't work because she had some sort of injury. But as far as I know, there's no news about that. Have you heard anything else about Aris's health at this point?
No, I think the last thing I saw was a tweet or something that mentioned that there still wasn't any sort of knowledge about how long the injury would last or how long that she would be out. So unfortunately, we don't have any further information to know when she'll be back.
Which No People Gate was less than 2 weeks ago, so could still be a minor injury. Hopefully it'll be a minor injury and she'll be back. Here's what we know about the tournament, and this is how the bracket is laid out, the way I'm going to go through these matches. I'll read them all first, and then we'll just talk about what jumps out. So we'll have Momo Watanabe versus Starlight Kid, Jungle Kiona versus Julia, Konami versus Azumi, Shuri versus Jamie Hayter, Saki Kashima versus Tam Nakano, Saya Kamitani versus Natsuko Tora, Utami Hayashishita versus Maika, and Mayu Iwatani versus Hana. So what are the main things that jump out to you here, Taylor?
I think the main things that jump out, I'm looking at that Momo Starlight Kid match. One staple of this tournament is that you are going to see some big upsets. You should expect them. Probably you think of Momo, you think of she's near the top of the promotion, so you think that maybe she would make it to the final four. But I think this is the type of tournament, the matches happen so fast, there's so many matches that it's very easy to sort of knock out the top players in the company without doing any sort of major damage to them, especially now with Momo maybe part of this storyline of she can't win, she's losing her friends and her support from Queen's Quest. That, to me, reads as a big flashing light of, you know, is, you know, it reads to me as that's an upset, but maybe not even an upset, because to me it seems so right there obvious that I don't know that they would do it the other way. Another thing that sticks out to me, I'm interested to watch Shuri versus Jamie Hayter. That's one where Shuri is a freelancer. You think that maybe they would have her go out in the first round, but with them trying to establish Donna Del Mondo, maybe she makes a run and goes far, but Jamie could also go far. That's one where I think either one of them winning probably gets them to the final four, in my mind. And the same thing with Utami and Maika. Maika, very young, inexperienced, but part of Donna Del Mondo. And Utami obviously is one of the bigger players in the company, so maybe she loses in the first round in an upset, and Maika makes it a certain amount of way to, again, make Donna Del Mondo seem very strong.
I meant to say this at the beginning, but as Taylor mentioned, the matches go fast because they're all short, and you can also be eliminated over the top rope in this tournament. So it makes it a lot easier to do eliminations, especially it makes it easier to do upsets. You can have you know, Utami Mika, you can just have her throw Utami over the top rope and advance. So that makes things a little easier for the underdogs in the tournament.
Right. And usually even going over the top rope, even less than being thrown over the top rope, oftentimes someone goes up to the top to do a move from the turnbuckle and gets pushed off, which would count. So that's not even, you know, being thrown over, which I guess in the world of wrestling would require some strength and ability to get your opponent over. That sort of, oh, you took a risk, it didn't pay off, and you fell over the top rope and you're out. So even more so, the ability to sort of fudge some of these matchups to get the lesser wrestlers ahead.
Yeah, you'll see they get on the apron somehow after they've been out of the ring, and then you just get them kicked off the apron, and sometimes that will be a finish. So pretty easy for upsets to happen. I agree. It breaks my heart. I agree that Momo's almost 100% going to lose this first match to Starlight Kid. Some other things that I'm interested in seeing. Not only are they trying to get Dona Del Mundo over, but you got this new Oedo Tai and Saki Kashima being a new member of Oedo Tai. So I kind of wonder if she makes a little run here. Natsuko's the new leader of Oedo Tai. You kind of wonder what kind of run she could make. And you were talking about that Utami Maika match in the first round. Whoever wins that is going to face the winner of Mayu versus Hana. And it's hard to imagine. I mean, Mayu or Hana versus Utami is like a big match. You know, you almost hate to give that away in the second round of this tournament.
Yeah, I agree. And the fact of the matter is, whoever makes it to that second round between Mayu and Hana, I don't think either of them has a chance of getting past the second round. They're both very established stars, maybe the top two stars in the entire promotion. I don't know that there's any benefit to moving them past the second round. So I think the winner of that Utami Maika match is going to go far into the tournament.
You will also almost always see in this tournament either a draw, a double elimination. All the matches are not going to happen. There will not be your straight bracket of these first, eight matches. There won't, in the next round, not all those matches are happening. Somebody's going to get double eliminated at some point. You could easily see that with Mayu versus Hana in the first round, and Utami Maika winner just strolls right through.
And you put Maika through to the third round, and you say, well, she's a little bit less experienced, so maybe we don't want her having three matches and we just have her have two matches. Yeah, that could certainly, I could definitely see that happening.
Okay, well, who stands out to you as a potential winner of the tournament?
So looking at the brackets, the way they're laid out and who's going up against who, I think the final two, my final two would be Julia and Natsuko Tora. I think those are the two people in my mind easily who would benefit the most from winning the tournament. Julia, very new and heading up her own unit in Dona Del Mundo, and Natsuko Tora on the same end, the new leader of the new Oedo Tai, unfortunately lost out on a big opportunity at No People Gate of the title match that she was supposed to be in. And so this could be her opportunity to win and really solidify her as the leader, as the big wrestler in the new Oedo Tai.
This is going to be very boring, Taylor, because I 100% agree that Julia is going to win the tournament. That makes the most sense to me. She's the kind of the person who is right there. She's definitely been pushed at the top of this promotion. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But she's someone who needs a boost. Now, it's a risk. It's a gamble, because generally what happens is the winner of this match will challenge for a title at the Gold May show, which you talked about with two of your recommendations in the 2016-2017 matches. But I think about Momo Watanabe winning this tournament and then beating Io Shirai at Gold May. I think about Arisa Hoshiki winning this tournament and then beating Momo Watanabe at the same show. So I'm a little skeptical of a Julia Arisa Hoshiki match this year, and even more skeptical at the idea of Julia beating her at this point. What do you think about that?
I could see it going both ways. I think Julia, they obviously see something in her. And I think that this is a promotion that has the sort of leeway that some other Joshi promotions that we talk about don't have, in that they can take some risks with the decisions they make, especially when it comes to the title. I mean, I think Arisa's was one of the signs of that, where I think about a year ago, before the Cinderella tournament happened, I don't know that there were many people who were thinking about Arisa as one of the top members of the company. And then she won the Stardom Cinderella tournament and she won the belt, and now she's near the top. So I think anything's possible. Like I said, I think Stardom has a little bit more rope where they can try some things. They obviously are drawing big numbers. Now, this show might be a little bit down because of the circumstances of what exactly is going on in the country and the world. But I think that they draw enough. They obviously have the backing of Bushiroad. So it's not a... It's some of these companies have to decide what happens based on needing to draw for the next show or the next two shows. If they try Julia and Julia wins the title and it turns out that people aren't interested or they sort of tune out of the company, it's very easy to, you know, okay, 3 months later we do a title match and she loses it to whoever who now holds the belt, who are more sure can be a draw. So I think it's certainly possible that Julia could win. It's obvious that Stardom sees big things in her, and I think this would be the next natural step, and it might be a good way to really solidify Donna del Mundo, which really, as we talked in the previous episode, is now only three people. Seems a bit light, but having a big champion as the leader of the group might really help that group solidify.
You're exactly right about Arisa and how that all played out. I'm not sure anybody saw that coming. I recall, and I'm not looking at the data, so I'll get this wrong, but I looked back at some point and she had won either none or just a handful of singles matches, period, before going through this tournament and winning, since she came back to the promotion, I mean. She was gone for some period of time. So I don't think many people saw it coming, so we could be getting ourselves worked up about Julia and they go a completely different way and fucking Saki Kashima runs through this tournament or something stupid. But the other thing I think you're right about is this tournament is so stacked. Like, almost everybody in this tournament is very good, or at least good at a minimum. And even if you put somebody like Julia with the white belt, and my point is that she's just not at the same working level as some of the other women in this company, but you can easily protect her by putting other really good matches on the shows around her. So I'm not even sure how important it is at this point if your champions are big-time work rate folks.
I definitely agree, yeah.
All right, well, that's the Stardom Cinderella tournament. Like you, I am really interested in what this show draws. They were drawing huge houses to Corcoran on their last two Bushiroad, the first two Bushiroad shows, but their last two Korakuens. So I'm fascinated to see what this draws, considering everything that's going on. But here's hoping it's a good number. Moving on to something else that happened at Korakuen Hall. Well, quickly, I want to say, okay, so that show's going to happen on Tuesday, and we won't be back for 2 weeks. So it's going to be a little stale by the time we get back. But I'm sure we'll have a full review of the show. It's just going to be not as immediate as I would prefer. But something else that happened at Corcoran Hall recently. Ice Ribbon, March 14th in Corcoran. This just dropped on the day we're recording this, March 22. So brand new show. We're talking about attendance at Corcoran. They drew 533 fans. Of course, it's at least at the height of American hysteria about coronavirus, but the Japanese curve is probably a little longer than ours. But for comparison's sake, back in February 24th, they drew 637. And then if you go back to their last normal show they did in Corcoran, so I'm excluding Ribbon Mania, which is their big show they do on New Year's Eve, that drew 841. So they're down about 300 fans, but that doesn't seem terrible considering everything that's going on.
I know I looked at the number when the show originally happened, and I was saying if they could get to 500, that would probably be fairly good for them, just based on what was going on and the fact that this show happening last week, on the 14th was still sort of in the throes of everyone thought that everything would be shut down for this long time. Now we're finally getting to the point and shows are starting to happen again. But really the first show that sort of happened that said, okay, everything's fine, was DDT, which was 6 days later. So almost an entire week later. So I'm not entirely surprised to see a low number. I thought that 500 was sort of the, if they got over 500, that would be pretty good. And they did. So, you know, I think pretty good considering this, the situation and the scenario that they were in.
What did you think about the show overall? This was headlined by the Infinity title match, Maya Yukihi taking on Hiragi Karumi. What were your overall thoughts on this show?
It was a really strong show. I really enjoyed it. As we go through match by match, you'll see that I really enjoyed a lot of the matches on the show. It was aired on Samurai, which unfortunately means that they have to slot it into a 2-hour time slot, which means some of the earlier matches got cut for time, which is a little bit unfortunate, as sometimes happens with these Samurai broadcasts. But I thought overall a very strong show, sets them up very well for their upcoming big Yokohama Bunkai show at the beginning of May. So overall, a very strong effort, and glad that we get to cover it here.
I gotta say, though, that that's a nice thing about Joshi. Pretty much, if you sit down to watch a show, it's going to be about 2 hours long at the maximum. So you don't really, it's not your New Japan 4.5-hour show for basically a house show. You know, you kind of get a little more people caring about your time, I feel like, in Joshi.
Yeah, you get a little bit more bang for your buck in terms of time management.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, well, we'll go down this card and we'll just start from the beginning. So opening match, Matsuya Uno, Rina Shingaki, Shuri, and Tei Hanma, the Joint Army, folks. So Tei Hanma 420, now part of the Joint Army, defeating Bani Oikawa, Miku Iono, Thekla, not sure how to pronounce that one, and Yappy.
Yeah, super exciting match. The first appearance of the full Joint Army after Rina Shingaki joined them at the February 24th Korakuen show, Ice Ribbon Reborn. Love seeing them come out in their gis, dressed in the gis. I thought that was really cool. This was one of the matches, I think this was the match that was most clipped from the entire show, so didn't get to see a ton of it, but liked what I saw, liked this sort of submission-based group that they put together with the Joint Army, so I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I want to say that it was a great opener because it was kind of nonstop action, but I also don't know if they just cut out the boring parts of the match. Hard to say. But a lot of it was fun. I'm a big Shuri fan, and this is like an excellent way to use her. I mean, I prefer her in some other spots where she's kind of higher up the card, you know, but I like her getting to do this style, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like that she sort of came back a few months ago, and it's been a little bit of just as a freelancer appearing in matches, sort of randomly put together matches that sometimes tend to happen across Joshi. I'm glad to see her in this position, being part of a group, being part of, obviously, this is part of a story of this group sort of coming together, and I wouldn't be surprised to see this group rise up the card as the weeks and months go on. So I'm happy to see Shuri, who I also really like, finally getting put in something a little bit more substantial.
Next up, we had Maika Ozaki and Tsukushi defeating the lovely Butchers team of Hamako Hoshi and Mochi Miyagi. This was kind of just a fine match, but something that I really enjoyed about it, or something that hit me while watching this, is that Joshi, to me, has a much better understanding than Japanese men's wrestling or any American wrestling of the way to like incorporate fun into wrestling in a way that makes sense, in a way that doesn't really make it stand out from the rest of the card. It's like pretty much everything. I mean, you have your blood feuds and you have that kind of stuff, but pretty much everything has this little hint of fun, and it never kind of goes over the top for me anyway. And I just think that's something that makes Joshi more enjoyable than any other wrestling for me.
Yeah, and I think Ice Ribbon is a promotion that's really good at it, walking that fine line between, I don't think that anyone would look at Ice Ribbon and say, oh, they're a comedy promotion, in the way that some people sort of look at DDT and say, oh, they're a comedy promotion. But they definitely do have these matches and storylines that are more humorous. Obviously, last year, the big storyline was Tsukasa Fujimoto and Andre's a Giant Panda and their sort of love affair that happened actually almost a year ago. Andre's a Giant Panda's wife fought Fujimoto at the Ice Ribbon Korakuen Hall show. So they definitely do have, I see exactly what you're talking about, the aspects of fun to the promotion without moving into being a comedy promotion or having it sort of take over the entirety of the promotion. As for this match, I really liked it. Tsukushi, I really think, is great. I thought she was really great in this match. This actually, I believe, was her 10th anniversary match of her wrestling debut. She debuted when she was 12 years old and has been wrestling for 10 years. So I thought it was really fun. I thought the end got really great. I thought it was really quick-paced, moving around. So I enjoyed it. A nice opening lower card match.
Next up was Aja Kong defeating Ibuki Hoshi. This was not my favorite Aja Kong singles match that we watched for this episode.
This is sort of the Aja Kong style that has sort of moved from promotion to promotion, is now an Ice Ribbon. Sort of the young rookie comes out to take on Aja Kong. They battle. It's very tough. They get some offense in and they lose. So it's a little bit of a style that I now feel that I've seen a lot of, and I think I've seen it done a little bit better in other places. I'm thinking of Makoto Shindo's debut match in Marvelous at Korakuen Hall against Yoshiko. I'm thinking of something totally different. But Aja Kong also has the, as you just mentioned, Aaron, the Manami match later in the show, which we'll talk about, but this has become a very Aja Kong sort of style matchup.
Yes, but I will say that I thought Hoshi's fire in this match was excellent and portends well for her. I just, at the beginning, I was kind of bored. I was like, okay, yeah, this is the same match we usually get out of Aja Kong, but Hoshi pulled me back into it with her emoting and selling. Thought she was really good in this match.
Yeah, she's very good. She's a young wrestler. I think the young wrestlers in Ice Ribbon have sort of been hidden in the shadow of Suzu Suzuki, who we'll talk about in a second. But all three of them are very strong, including Hoshi. And I think that she did have a good showing, even though it wasn't my favorite match in this style.
Yes, we are going to talk about Suzu Suzuki right now. She had a match with Tsukasa Fujimoto. Suzu Suzuki wins the match. But I think before we get into the match, I want to talk about two things. First, I meant to do this at the top of this segment, but talking about Fujimoto, I think, is a good point to kind of talk about what Ice Ribbon is in, like, you know, who runs this thing. We haven't really done much here in this Ice Ribbon segment for the people who are listening who've never watched Ice Ribbon.
Right, so Ice Ribbon is a promotion that was founded in 2006 by Emi Sakura, who people may know either from Gato Move, she now works there, or from her appearances in AEW, where she's appeared a couple times. She had the title match with Riho, who she trained. Riho was, for a long time, a Ice Ribbon wrestler, as she was sort of part of the group, along with Emi Sakura, that came from their original promotion, which is Gato Kunyan, to this new Ice Ribbon promotion. Emi Sakura left after a few years to do her own thing, then started Gato Move. And after she left, Hikaru Shida, who you also may know from AEW, and Tsukasa Fujimoto took over the training at the Ice Ribbon Dojo. Shida was one of the big members of this of Ice Ribbon until she left, I think a few years ago now at this point. She came back briefly, but then left again, and obviously now is based in the States for AEW. I kind of think of Ice Ribbon as sort of, we talked about last week, as Stardom being a mix of the more idol side of life, and but also sort of hard-hitting Joshi. I like to think of Ice Ribbon as sort of the perfect combination of almost every style of Joshi wrestling. You'll see it all, as we just talked about. They do comedy. They do sometimes live on the funnier side of life, which you can sort of see in other promotions like Tokyo Joshi from time to time. They have a lot of hard-hitting matches, which is very much like Seedling or Sendai Girls. And they also have sort of, you know, I think, like, as we mentioned last week, all wrestling is sort of based on this, but they also do have, you know, the attractive members of, you know, they're pushing people who are attractive. So I think it's a perfect balance between, if you're looking for something that covers all the bases of what Joshi can be, I think that's what Ice Ribbon is to me.
And gosh, this match almost encapsulates that idea to me. It starts with this hilarious pre-match video, but then we get like a hard-hitting match between these two. Can you explain, for the folks who have gone back and watched this show before listening, what exactly was the build-up for the story here between Suka and Suzu?
Okay, so Suzu Suzuki is a younger wrestler who was originally supposed to debut in 2018, but right before she debuted, she got in a biking accident where she broke her collarbone, and so her debut was delayed, but instead of sort of letting it get them down, they used this bike accident and they worked it into her gimmick, where she would ride a bike to the ring, and she had this call that was Chirin Chirin, which is the onomatopoeia sound for a bike bell or a bike horn on a bike. And she would say this during her matches. She would do a move and she would go Chirin Chirin, and the audience would do it along with her, and then she would hit this move. At the February 24th Hurricane show, she held a Chirin Chirin retirement match. She's retiring the bells. She had a very emotional retirement where she held the bells up and she was crying, and then she laid them in the ring and left them in the ring as the camera sort of zoomed in on these bike bells. So she retired that gimmick, and then at one of the small Ice Ribbon Dojo shows, she left a note saying that she was going to be disappearing for a while to go on a journey of personal growth and experience. And so she disappeared for a while, but at one of the other dojo shows, she appeared and she attacked Fujimoto and left a small note that just said the word leg on it in Japanese. It was very confusing. People didn't know what it meant. A couple weeks later, the same thing happened. She appeared and she left a note that said roll on it, and also a picture of someone who was caught up in a whirlwind or tornado or hurricane, whatever you want to call it. So it's sort of been this very vague, mysterious, what's going on. Fujimoto put out a 1 million yen reward if anyone could go and find Suzu Suzuki and where she was. Fujimoto went out into the woods, which you'll see in this pre-match promo video, to find Suzu Suzuki, found her, but Suzu fled and Fujimoto was not able to catch up with her, even though Fujimoto, I believe in high school, was a track athlete or a cross-country runner or something of that sort. So that's sort of the basic setup of the match, which is this was the debut of the new Suzu Suzuki, now free of the Chirin Chirin ball and the Chirin Chirin gimmick with the bike, going up in a singles match against Fujimoto, who is arguably the ace of Ice Ribbon. Obviously, as we mentioned, has been around for many years in the promotion, was the trainer, so is a big name, and so this was a big match. And as you mentioned, Suzuki pulling out the victory, and it was revealed that all of these clues throughout the many weeks with leg roll and this picture of the whirlwind, it turned out that Suzu Suzuki created a counter for the Japanese Ocean Cyclone Suplex, which is Tsukasa Fujimoto's finishing move. It was that move was actually handed down to Fujimoto from Manami Toyota, who was the originator of the move and was one of Fujimoto's idols, trainers. And so it was handed down officially. It's a big move, a very well-known move in the history of Joshi wrestling. So Suzu Suzuki figured out the counter, which was this leg roll pin, and pinned Fujimoto for the victory.
This was an outstanding match, I thought. Probably my favorite match of everything we watched for the past 2 weeks for this episode. I've got it at 4.25. Great escalation, perfectly paced, lots of great strikes, impressive spots. I mean, it just about had it all for me. I just loved it.
Yeah, I really liked it too. Fujimoto is one of the greats of current modern Joshi. So came in with high expectations and they were definitely met for me. I was a little bit lower than you. I think I went about 4 stars, but I thought it was really great. A really great way to get Suzuki back in the promotion. It's very clear that they have high expectations and hopes for Suzuki, as we'll talk about closer to the end of the show. But you are going to see her at the top of the company very soon, and probably for a very long time.
And next up was a 4-way ladder match involving Rina Yamashita, Risa Seira, Ram Kaicho, and Satsuko Totoro. You told me this, but can you tell me again what the... there's a new belt, right, at the Yokohama show? And that's what this was for?
Yeah, so they're debuting a new belt at the Yokohama show, which is called the Fantast Ice Belt.
That's right.
Which is a play on the word fantastic, but with an E added, so it's Fantast Ice. And it's a belt that's going to be very similar if you watch DDT. DDT has the Extreme title, the DDT Extreme title, where usually the champion for the championship matches determines the stipulation of each match. It can be totally different. It can be totally wild. It could be comedic. It could be hardcore. It could be very standard. But the champion determines it. So this Fantast Ice Championship is going to be in that style where... the champion will determine what kind of match is held for the championship.
So basically they had a little card up above the ring. I guess there were two of them. So the two winners, whoever grabbed those two, would move on to this match to determine the very first champion. And the winners were Rina Yamashita and Risa Seira.
Yeah, an exciting match. I was thinking to myself, this one was a little... this one was a little trimmed as well, which was slightly unfortunate. But I don't think I've ever seen people climbing the ladders faster in a ladder match than I have in this match. People really running up the ladders very quickly, which I couldn't believe. I'm so trained in past ladder matches for people climbing up the ladder as if they've never used their feet before. But I thought it was a fun match. I think they did some fun things with the ladder. And it was good, and I think the winners were Rina Yamashita and Risa Seira. I think those are two great options. They chose a death match is going to be the match at Yokohama, so I think that's going to be a super exciting match. Two people who are really strong in that style of match, and I think it will be one of the better matches on that card.
I just hate ladder matches so much. This was hard for me, just because... it's not anybody in this match's fault. It's just ladder matches have gotten so bad in like the WWE world over the years that I'm just bored of them. And it was hard for this match to overcome that for me. The main event was the Infinity title match. Maya Yukihi defeated Hiragi Kurumi, retained the Infinity title in a match that... so I think it's... you're going to... I hate to spoil everybody. You're going to have this as a recommended match later. So I got a sense that you really liked this. And I liked it a lot too, but the reason why the Suzuki Fujimoto match was something that I enjoyed more was played out in the fact that this had like a very slow beginning for me, and that made it hard for me to be invested in it. About halfway through, it got insane. I mean, the last half of this match is so good, but by then it's almost... I'm kind of like my emotions are dulled by that point. And so I had to get back into the match in a way. And so that brought it down a little for me. But you can't deny that the last half of this match and the end were just fantastic. Fantastice, even, you might say.
Oh, God. Yeah, I really liked the whole thing. I didn't feel the slowness at the beginning. So I guess I just have to disagree with that. I thought that the arm work was really good. I was a bit worried partway through the match that it was going to end up getting left behind and sort of forgotten, but in the end, it didn't.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the Slab Pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great Slab Packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club Slab Packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3-second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Which I was really happy about. I just thought it was a strong match. I think Maya Yukihi is super talented. I think she's probably one of the more... This is a bit weird to say about someone who is the champion of this promotion and also wrestles in a very high spot in Oz Academy, but I think she's probably one of the more underrated wrestlers in Joshi today. I think she's got great skill. She has great personality, obviously. Turning a little bit more heel here with the story going on with her sort of disrespecting the Ice Ribbon roster, but has shown that she can do both babyface and heel very well. So I think she's super talented, and I really enjoyed the match. Love the story of the arm work from Maya. So yeah, I really enjoyed it and didn't feel that it was slow at the beginning.
Well, fine.
So take that.
That's the 314 show. They also ran Corrigan Hall on February 24th. I don't feel the need to run down this match by match, Taylor, since it happened about a month ago at this point. But do you have thoughts that you specifically wanted to talk about from this show?
Yeah, I guess I would just say we talked about Suzu Suzuki. If you sort of want to get the whole sort of beginning to end of this Suzu story, I would recommend, also I thought it was a great match, I would recommend her match against Miku Ono. I thought it was really strong. Obviously at the end she has the Chirin retirement ceremony with the Ice Ribbon ring announcer actually in on commentary making this speech about the bells, and it's, you know, it's sort of very, I don't want to say over the top, but it's very, you know, presented as if it's a big moment. So I would recommend that. You can watch that match and then the Fujimoto match back-to-back and sort of get the whole story there. And I know that, Aaron, I'll leave it to you. I know that you really liked the tag team title match.
Yes, I did. I mean, I liked... The thing about this show, generally, is it was a lot of fun from top to bottom. So it's one of those shows that it was really easy to put on, really easy to watch. Nothing, I don't think anything blew me away. The tag title match was the best match on this show, without a doubt. And I just love, to me, Yamashita is like so fun to watch just because she has this like, she's more of a powerhouse. She really gets you that thing that you don't always get in Joshi where, you know, the people are just smaller sometimes. And so sometimes it's like somebody really beating the hell out of somebody, but it's not as impressive when you zoom out and you see somebody like Rina Yamashita beating the hell out of somebody because she's just huge. She's just bigger and stronger than a lot of these people. So that's a lot of fun for me. Obviously, Fujimoto is out of this world. So it was just an excellent match. But overall, I just can't impress upon people enough that if you just want to turn on a show and have fun and see like all baseline good matches, this is a great show to watch.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I had a great time watching it, and I felt the same way, where I felt that there wasn't really a blowaway match, a big match of the year candidate, maybe you would call it, but all the matches are really good and really interesting.
All right, let's get back into some of the news items from the past couple of weeks. We talked, and by we, I mean Taylor, talked a little bit about the Joshi Rookie Tournament last time out, but now we've got some brackets. So here are the people that we have so far, or I guess this is everybody, but we got Makoto Shindo from Marvelous against Akari from Pure J, Maria from Marvelous versus Mei Hoshizuki from Marvelous, Mei Suruga versus, from Gatomu versus Onori Ana from Seedling, Kaneko. I don't know who this is. So it's, you've got some notes after it, but I'm not familiar with this rookie.
Yeah, so this is a rookie from Sendai who just passed her rookie test. So she is a brand new. She was the X. Originally, they announced 11 of the 12 names for this tournament. They didn't announce the matchups, but they announced 11 of 12 names because Kaneko had not made her debut at that point in time. She made her debut and they said, oh, she's the 12th member of this tournament. So she is the least experienced.
But she's been on a Sendai Girls show already? And I missed it?
No, she was just announced, like she came out and they this is her and she passed her rookie test and she's going to be debuting soon. Unless there was a show I missed that she wrestled on, but I don't think there was.
I was going to say, that's one I catch almost every show, so I would have been surprised by that. But she will be wrestling Korea from Pure J. We got Yurika Oka from Sendai Girls taking on Haruka Umesaki from Diana. Nanami from Diana versus Manami from Sendai Girls. That is the lineup. What do you think? What sticks out to you from that? Who do you think might care? I think it's kind of hard to say in a rookie tournament, like who's gonna go when it's a bunch of rookies all from different promotions. The one thing that sticks out to me is there are two matches that are listed as the winner gets a bye to the final four, Mikoto Shindo versus Akari and Nanami versus Manami. So you would think those people have the leg up in the tournament?
Yeah, and I think looking at those two matches, it seems to me Makoto Shindo is sort of the most heralded rookie from the Marvelous, the three-person Marvelous rookie class. So I would think she would go through, and then just looking at it, this is a Sendai Girls show. Technically, they're the ones hosting it. So on the other end with Nanami and Minami, Minami is from Sendai Girls, so you figure that she would win to get a Sendai Girls representative into the Final Four. I think sometimes looking at these, it might be a little bit of a toss-up, but I sort of look at it and seeing trying to represent maybe in the Final Four four different promotions so that you're showing sort of, you know, hey, all these promotions have great rookies and it doesn't turn into, you know, the Final Four is, you know, two Marvelous people and two Sendai people, because then it's sort of like, oh, all these other promotions are, you know, these rookies are, they stink and who cares. So looking at it, I would probably guess, and this is a guess, I could be totally wrong, I think it's probably going to be Makoto Shindo, Mei Suruga on one end of the final four, and I would think Minami would get to the final four, as we mentioned. And I would actually probably pick Haruka Umesaki. She's from Diana. She's getting a lot of bookings this year in a lot of different promotions. She's making a big name for herself, and I think that she's someone who could definitely make a strong run in this tournament.
You didn't pick anybody from Sendai Girls.
I picked Minami.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I messed that up. Sorry, everyone. I love Mikoto Shindo. She's like one of my favorites. I got to meet her at Sendai Girls show January 5th. Very, just a huge sweetheart. And a big fan of hers. So that's who I will be rooting for. But that doesn't mean, of course, that she's going to win the tournament. I'm also a big, which I'm going to talk about her later, but I'm a big Yurika Oka fan. I think she's very good.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent in this tournament. Actually, I think I mentioned this last show. They've done this rookie tournament twice in the past, in 2008 and 2009. And I was actually looking back at some of those, the brackets for those. And, you know, we think about some of these wrestlers and we say, oh, we don't really know much about them because they're just young rookies. But some of these rookie tournaments in the past have been stacked. I mean, Asuka was in one. Io Shirai, Mio Shirai was in run, Ryo Mizunami, Hiroyo Matsumoto. So a lot of people who have gone on to do big things in the world of Joshi have been in these rookie tournaments, and you look through this list of wrestlers, and there could be a lot of these wrestlers who go on to do big things and lead their promotion, or if they lead another promotion, or wherever they end up.
The first round of the tournament is going to be on March 28th. The second round will be April 22nd, and the finals are on April 26th. So we will talk about that on the show as it progresses. Next note, we've got Himeka Arita is leaving Actress Girls.
Yeah, big news. Big news. I feel that every sort of departure from a company of anyone sort of brings this feeling of, I don't know if doom is the right word, but there's such uncertainty where, you know, oh, I'm leaving this promotion has become sort of a code for someone going somewhere else. Now, that could be Stardom, it could be WWE, or it could be freelance. We've seen a couple people, Ryo Mizunami comes to mind, who went freelance from Wave a couple months ago and has seemingly just decided to be freelance, wrestle all over the place. In a lot of different promotions, including Seedling, she was in recently. So it could be that Himeka leaves and does turn freelance, but there is also the possibility that she's picked up by one of these sort of bigger promotions that are starting to grow and some people away from their home promotions.
Well, we also saw Sauriano declare that she was going freelance, also from Actress Girls, and she seems to have just stayed freelance, right?
Yeah, she stayed freelance. She has an interesting situation where she's a pretty prominent wrestler in Oz Academy, being part of Seki-gun or Osaki-gun or whatever you want to call it. So she sort of has, when she went freelance, my big question was, well, if she's going to one of these big promotions like Stardom, or somewhere else, could she, or maybe even Tokyo Joshi, could she still wrestle in Oz Academy? Because I think that she, I mean, I don't know, I haven't spoke to her about it, but I think she enjoys doing it. She's been wrestling there for quite a while. So that one was an interesting one. She stayed mostly freelance. So it's very possible that Himeka is going to stay freelance and just see where she goes. But we won't know. It's the end of the month, I believe, is her last date in act. Trust Girls. So in about a week or a little more than a week, I think we'll probably find out what's going on.
Last bit of news here. I saw this in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And before I talk about what the news item is, I would just always say that when you read Dave Meltzer talk in the Observer, especially about Stardom, you have to be somewhat skeptical because he has a very obvious news source, which is Fumi, who's on the Pacific Rim podcast, who is close to Rossi Ogawa. So you know that you're getting the company line when you read what Dave writes about Stardom in the Observer. So just to have that out there. But this is an interesting story, I think. And that is that Takayuki Kawakami and his wife, they were the personal managers of Tom Nakano and Itsuki Hoshino, who are Stardom wrestlers. And apparently, things have broken down to where Kawakami has filed a breach of contract lawsuit. So Nakano left Kawakami's management last year, and then he is claiming that she and Itsuki Hoshino are still under contract to him. So there's an issue between them. And then there's this other issue that he claims Stardom breached Nakano's contract that apparently he would have had with Stardom because she was promised a major singles championship run and that never happened. So this is going to be an ongoing lawsuit. Kawakami has apparently claimed on Twitter that he was going to reveal Ogawa's dirty secrets in court. Presumably that'll be about his weird collections that we see in the pictures that we get when Rossi. It might be about why he always wears a hat. I think that could be an interesting dirty secret from Rossi. But it's interesting in that we didn't see Hoshino on the No People Gate show, so that might have been an issue related to this. And so I think that's going to be fascinating to see how this is resolved and if anything comes out that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm mostly interested to find out what Ogawa's dirty secrets could be, because I feel like there have been many things that have come out about him in the past. So if there's even more, I can't believe what those things might be.
No, but it should be fun, right?
We'll see. I don't know. You know, sometimes with these things, they pop up and then they disappear and you never hear anything else about them. And they just sort of evaporate into the world of rumors and things like that. But we'll see what happens.
We need the Japanese version of David Bixenspan to keep us caught up on this litigation, I think.
Yeah, to go through the court document files and I don't know. Does Japan have a Freedom of Information Act or something like that?
I have no idea. Couldn't begin to guess. But the point I was making about Dave and his stardom sources is, like he writes in the Observer, the belief is Nakano and Hoshino want nothing to do with him, Kawakami, and are happy working for Bushiroad, which may or may not be true, but it probably is true, but it's just kind of funny, the kind of editorializing that you get that is transparent in many ways. So anyway, if we find anything else out about that, we'll report it here for sure. All right, it's time for Spark Notes. This is the part of the show where we do kind of quick hits going down some of the smaller shows that have happened. Taylor, which show do you want to start with?
Well, I guess we'll start with the first show chronologically, which would be Just Tap Out Girls 2. And I'll start with Just Tap Out Girls 2. Just Tap Out is Taka Michinoku's new promotion after Kaientai Dojo went away and became 2AW. He founded Just Tap Out. He has a lot of trainees, young female trainees, so he puts together these. This is the second one, Just Tap Out Girls shows, which feature all women wrestlers. Probably the big highlight of this one was Kagetsu. I think this might be Kagetsu's last sort of retirement road match making tape against Mika. So if you've been following along with the Kagetsu retirement matches, this may be one that you want to check out. Also, Andras Miyagi, who spent some time in Stardom recently, seems to have left that promotion and landed here in Just Tap Out. She has a match as well on the show. It's only three matches on the show. It's very quick. In fact, the Nikko broadcast actually showed an entire other show of Just Tap Out in the two-hour segment of this Just Tap Out stream and still had time for these three matches. So quite a short show. If you're looking for something quick and want to check out that Kagetsu match, give it a watch.
I guess we might as well stick chronologically. So the next one is the Diana show from February 22. Is it fair to say that Diana has been most well-known lately, A, for never making tape, and B, for the presence of Sari?
Yeah, that's what they've been best known for probably for a while. The fact is that before this year, I think now they've made tape twice or maybe three times. I think before this year, the last time they made tape was either 2018 or maybe even 2017. So it's been quite a while, but Sari has sort of been their representative around the world of Joshi. Obviously had a great year last year, a wrestler of the year, at least wrestler of the year contender type year, if not better. I thought that she was the wrestler of the year. But she has definitely been their sort of calling card as their most famous wrestler, but unfortunately that is no more. She is headed off to the land of WWE. And I believe unless another show makes tape, which at this point would be very unexpected, she had her last match on February 24th, that this match against Yoshiko will be her last aired match from the world of Joshi before she heads off to WWE.
Should we talk about Yoshiko before we talk about the match?
So we probably should to sort of talk about the elephant in the room when it comes to Yoshiko. So for those who don't know, Yoshiko was a wrestler for Stardom for many years. She had a match a few years ago in Stardom where she the match turned into a shoot and she injured her opponent. It was very controversial. It's very, it's called the Ghastly Match in Japan. It's a very brutal looking match. You can look it up. We won't link it to it or anything like that, but it is available if you want to hunt it down. After that happened, Yoshiko announced that she was retiring. A few people left Stardom. Some people in Stardom got pay reduces. Stardom introduced a rule of no closed fist punches allowed in any of their matches. So if you ever watch Stardom matches, you'll never see any closed fist punches at any time. Yoshiko retired, but then came back a few years later. Nanae Takahashi, who had also been in Stardom, had left the promotion during this whole controversy, founded her own promotion called Seedling, and brought back Yoshiko as one of the big stars, a very controversial move. I know there's many people around the world who don't want to watch Yoshiko matches because of what's happened. I totally understand that. It's totally fine. I just wanted to say, sort of as a disclaimer, Yoshiko is a very prominent Joshi wrestler in many different companies in Seedling. As we'll talk about in a minute, she has this big match in Diana. She sometimes wrestles in DDT. She sometimes wrestles in Oz Academy. So we will be covering her. It's not any comment on what happened, but just the fact that we are trying to cover the world of Joshi wrestling, and she is a prominent Joshi wrestler. So that's that. That's sort of the disclaimer, episode 2 disclaimer on Yoshiko, because I know that there's many people who rightly feel very strongly about what she's done in the past.
That was a very sensitive handling of of Yoshiko and the Ghastly Match. So very funny.
It's a very sensitive, it's a sensitive subject. So, and I and like I said, I understand where people come from on both sides of, you know, both sides of opinions on how to deal with it now. So we understand. We're not doing it out of any sort of, hey, we'll show you, but just that she is a prominent and in Japan well-received and well-liked wrestler, so we will be covering her, and we just wanted to say that.
Well, all that having been said, we might as well talk about the match, the Yoshiko versus Sari match. What did you think about it?
I thought it was really good. My thing about Yoshiko is I don't think she's really a, I don't think she's a outstanding singles wrestler. I think she's a lot better in tag matches, and in a tag situation. I still thought the match was really good, as we'll hear, as we'll talk about in a few minutes. It's still one of my recommended matches. I think just because I really like Sari, I think that she's really great, hard hitting, obviously. There's some sort of bittersweetness to this match with it being her last match, her last match that we'll probably see before she goes away. I loved her style. As I mentioned, I loved her last year. So I enjoyed the match. Wasn't a super great match, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think I went into this too excited, too worked up, and kind of worked myself into a shoot. It did not live up to my lofty expectation, just because I love Sari so much. I thought this was a perfect matchup for her. I mean, it is a perfect matchup. And it just, the start was hot, but then it just kind of got slow for me, presumably because they were going 20 minutes and they knew it was going to go to a draw. But by the time it picked up, and this is a pattern on this show, and you'll hear this from me in the future, it's like, when you lose me in a wrestling match, you just lose me. And I'm just not invested anymore. So even if it gets better later, I really don't care.
Yeah, I think Yoshiko has that problem where the middle of her matches tend to sometimes lull, as she sort of has the beginning that, you know, you start out hot, boom, 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 and it's hard hitting. And then there's the middle, especially with it being a 20-minute draw, which I have actually more to talk about in a second. But she does sometimes get lost in the middle of her matches where it can't keep up that intensity that she has. So it goes into a lull and then has to build back up. So I see what you mean. I do want to mention, I sort of understand going to a draw, but Sari, you're heading out of the company. Who knows if you'll ever return? I mean, she is very young at this point, so she could do 10 years in WWE and come back and still be in her early 30s. I was just a bit confused by going to a draw. It didn't seem to really help either of them. Sari going out, just a bit confusing to me, I guess, at the end of the day.
And this is one of your recommended matches. I haven't heard you say much good about it.
I know. I still thought it was really good because I liked a lot of the action, but not a it's not a perfect match. And I think it's a very strong match, but Sari spent all of last year having some of the best, I would say some of the best matches, period, not even just in Joshi, having some of the best matches. So as you mentioned, the standards for her, in my mind, are very high. It didn't meet those standards, but still very good because I think that she's one of the best Joshi wrestlers in the world.
Yeah, I voted her Wrestler of the Year in the VOW poll. I thought she was the best wrestler in the world last year. So no disagreement for me. Okay, a couple of shows that I did not check out, so I'm going to leave them to you.
So there was a Wave show on March 1st, 3-1, NAMI won. Don't have a lot to say about this. Wasn't a big match in terms of happening. There was a Queen Elizabeth title match, which Sakura Hirota is the champion, her first singles title of her career that she's ever held. There was also a semi-main of Nozaki and Iroha versus Miyuki Takase and Tsuri, which was building to the Nozaki-Takase match, which we'll talk about in a few minutes here, which I also thought was fun. But nothing on this show to go out of your way about. And then also on March 1st, Pure J had Spring Fight Osaka at the Osaka Yodagawa Kumin Center, which actually reminded me, they have a painting in the background on the back wall, reminded me of there was a venue where Chikara used to run where there was a painting on one of the walls and there was some match where someone tried to throw Chuck Taylor into the painting or something like that. So that, unrelated to really anything that's going on, but that reminded me of that. Things to check out. I thought the main event of this Pure J show was really good. Leon and Manami Katsu against Hanako Nakamori and Rina Yamashita. Thought that match was really great, worth a check out. And also, Maya Yukihi had a match against Correa, one of those rookies we talked about being in the rookie tournament. I believe, unless I am incorrect or I have my facts wrong, that this is only Maya Yukihi's second match ever in Pure J. I thought it was a really fun match. I thought she did very well. So also worth a check out. This show is on the Pure J YouTube, so it can be checked out very easily. Each of the matches is divided into their own video, so you don't have to do any fast-forwarding or rewinding if you only want to watch certain matches. But I would say definitely check this show out. It's worth a watch.
Okay, next up was the Sendai Girls March 8th show. And this was... it was kind of your classic Sendai Girls show in that it had a really good, like, kind of rookie or, you know, young wrestlers opener. It had an Iger Sakura Hirota match that I did not watch and will never watch. And then everything else on it was really good, and it had one excellent match. I think, like, Sendai Girls shows are so watchable for me. I just really enjoy this promotion. But the best match on here for me was the Sendai Girls World title match, Chiro Hashimoto versus Shuri. Chiro won, retained the title, and I thought it was an excellent match. It was one that I really enjoyed. I'm a big fan of both of these wrestlers. You had great arm work early on that paid off. This was Shuri doing the arm work on Chiro, and it really paid off at the end with Shuri looking like she could have gotten a submission. And they even included the story from the January 5th match. So I was at that match live, and anybody who says that that was a work is dumb. They are clueless. Seriously. I mean, it's insane. What a terrible take. It was a 5-minute match. You know, it's not like Sendai Girls runs Tokyo every weekend. They have to do business in Tokyo. You can't run a 5-minute main event for people who paid $50 to watch this match. You just can't do it. People were confused walking out. And it's not like when this match started, it was this hot, like, Chihiro trying to get back at her because she knocked her out. You know, that wasn't at all what this match was about. They had it play in later in the match where Shuri, after avoiding her head the entire match, finally lands a couple of kicks to the head and they kind of play like it knocked out Chihiro. And that was, I thought, a perfect little touch, a nice callback. It added to the escalation of the match. I thought the finish was a little bit abrupt, but I would rather err on ending the match too soon than letting it go on too long. So this was something I really liked. I had it at 4 stars.
So I did watch the Hirota Iger match.
I'm sorry. We do this show for free, and until somebody pays me, I will not watch any more Iger matches.
Actually, when it first started, I was like, oh gosh. I think Hirota and Iger wrestled, I believe, 9 singles matches last year alone, which is a lot of matches. But I actually have to say, to defend this match, adding Kaoru and Mei Suruga really helped it. I thought it was a fun match. It got out of the sort of rut that these Hirota Iger singles matches get in, where it's sort of the same. It's like a comedian coming out and doing the same bits over and over again in the same spot on the card. So I guess I'll throw out that sort of very weak defense of that match. I liked the main event as well. I wasn't as high on it as Aaron was. I did think it ended abruptly, and I thought that that actually did hurt the match. I thought it was really heating up. I was getting really into it, and then it just sort of ended, and I was like, oh, okay. I thought Tsuri looked really good. I thought that she really looked in the way that I was a fan of hers from before she left for UFC, and this really felt like sort of old school Tsuri with the kicks, really tough kicks, a really hard battle from her. So I enjoyed it a little bit less than Aaron, just because that ending, I would have liked to see it go a little bit longer.
I will say this for Iger. Also, what I saw at that January 5th show is that you can't always tell this as much on Nico because, you know, the sound is muffled, but the crowd loved it. I mean, they ate up everything that she did, every bit she did. They just, now Kaoru was in that match too, but everybody loved it. Actually, that might be wrong. I might have made the Kaoru part up. I think maybe she was in a tag match. Regardless, everybody loved it. So I'm the one who's wrong, and that's fine, but that doesn't mean I have to watch it. All right, next up we have here the Wave show from March 11.
Yeah, so this is a show that I think I briefly mentioned it on our last show, where there's been this Wave versus Marvelous sort of feud going on, and this was part of that, where they had 5 Marvelous wrestlers and 5 Wave wrestlers who did a draw to pick 5 singles matches against each other. They had these chains that were multicolored, and they hid them under a sheet. It was a very complicated way of choosing partners. But I really like this. This is on Wave's YouTube channel. Most of the matches, I think maybe all the matches are clipped to some extent. But this is very quick, and I think a lot of the matches are good. They're a lot of fun, and if you're looking for something really quick, I think in total, actually 6 matches on the show because there's a young wrestler tag opener. I think all the matches on the show in total about 40 minutes of video time, not even in-ring time. This is just video time, so very easy to get through. And I will talk about one of the matches when we get to the recommended matches because I thought it was really, really great. But definitely a show to check out. Very quick, easy to access because it's on the YouTube and, again, split into different matches. So very easy to hop around and just watch the matches that you're interested in.
All right, and the last show that we have listed here for the Spark Notes section is the Actress Girls show from March 15th. This was kind of similar. Well, not really. Everything I was about to say is a lie. But it reminded me, in a way, of the Ice Ribbon 224 show, and that everything was a lot of fun. The difference with this match or this show was there were 2 really excellent matches on the show for me. I really loved the Hanma Hasegawa match, Tei Hanma versus Yoshiko Hasegawa, and I also loved the Actress Girls title match, which had Miyuki Takase versus Nagase Nozaki. So those were, I feel like I, maybe I'm maybe I was just being really generous the last 2 days that when I watched a lot of this stuff, but I went 4 stars on both those matches. A lot of, in the Hanma Hasegawa match, just like hard hitting and fast paced, which is what I like in wrestling. In the title match, you just had this great story of the heel dominating early on. You got the babyface comeback. I mean, it's like an easy story to do, but they did it well. Nozaki has such great kicks and does great character work inside the match, in her moves, in her movements, in her emoting, just everything. Takase was just great as a babyface. Is it just me, or is her look very similar to Sari's?
Yeah, I mean, they both sort of have the red and, red, gold, white sort of look. Yeah, I could see that.
Even the, I'm not sure what they're called, on their costumes, but, on the bottoms, the little, panels.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very similar to what Sari wears. But anyway, two really good matches, in my opinion.
Well, I thought the main event was incredible. I went 4.5 stars. I loved it. I thought it was really good. You mentioned those kicks. There was two kicks in this match that I went nuts for. I actually went back and rewound a couple times because the kick happened and I would go back and watch the kick again. I just thought it was really good, really hard hitting. As you mentioned, a great story. I just loved it. To me, it's an absolutely seek out this match. Maybe the first match since we started this podcast where I'm saying to the listeners, go out and find this match. It's totally worth it. A totally great match. But I definitely agree. The whole show is super fun, easy to get through. I think part of it also is that, there's a lot of sharing of talent between the different promotions. So some promotions you may end up seeing sort of very similar wrestlers from show to show. There's a lot of wrestlers on this show that you will not see on other shows. Some you will, a few you will, obviously. Miko Ono, we talked about Momo Tani was on the Pure J show I mentioned earlier, but a lot of wrestlers that you can only see here. So definitely worth checking out the whole show, but definitely seek out that main event.
I think we talked about almost all of our recommended matches. I see a few on your list that you did, but you want to run down your recommended matches from the last 2 weeks?
Sure. So Yoshiko versus Sari from Diana, we already talked about that. One which sort of isn't in the last 2 week period, but is a match that I watched in the last 2 weeks, is Lulu Pencil and Tamura versus the tag team of Tropico Wild, which is Saki and Yuna Mizumori, in Gato Move on January 25th. We haven't yet on this podcast had an opportunity to talk too much about Gato Move, but we will in the future. But this is a match. Go to their YouTube, the Gato Move YouTube. You can find it very easily. They upload matches twice a week. Very easy to watch. But this match is really great. I think Gato Move has the reputation of being more of a sort of comedy promotion. They wrestle in this converted dentist office, which is a bit weird. I think people see that and immediately think that this is some goofy thing. But I think that this match, which I just mentioned, is a really good display of how good a lot of these wrestlers are technically. It's a really strong technical match. It builds really well to the finish. So definitely check that out. Miyuki Takase versus Nagisa Nosaki. We just talked about that from Actress Girls. Definitely search that out. And Maya Yukihi versus Haragi Karumi from Ice Ribbon, which we already covered. And then finally, from that Wave title, from that Wave show that we talked about with the Marvelous versus Wave, five singles matches on 311, Yumi Oka versus Mei Hoshizuki. It's a little bit clipped. It's about a 9-minute match and they only show about 6 minutes of it, but it is, the 6 minutes they show is really good. It's really fast paced. It's go, go, go. It's really exciting. Mei Hoshizuki, to me, out of all the rookies in Joshi currently, is the one to watch. I think she's already showing a lot of big time skill. So definitely check that out.
All right. I'll run down mine. Basically the point of this is, our whole idea is to cover all of Joshi and to let people who want to follow Joshi have somewhere you can come to get a little bit of everything and know what to watch and what you can skip and everything. So we just kind of throw in these recommended matches. It just happens that on this episode, most of them that we're going to talk about, we've already talked about. But that's okay. That's how it's going to happen sometimes. And we can probably put these lists together somewhere and tweet them out or whatever to make it easier for people. But my recommended matches, we talked about all of them, but it's Chihiro Hashimoto versus Shuri from the 3-8 Sendai Girls show, Tsukasa Fujimoto versus Suzu Suzuki from the 3-15 Ice Ribbon show, and the two I've talked about most recently from the 3-15 Actress Girls show, Tei Hanma versus Yoshiko Hasegawa, and Miyuki Takase versus Nagase Nozaki. So I highly suggest that everyone check all those out. So next, it's time, our last segment of the show is to talk about what's going to be coming up soon, both what's going to be airing soon and what's just going to be happening soon. So if you missed the first episode, if you're not that familiar, Joshi can often have a long lag time between when the show happens and when it actually makes tape. That's been less common right now because Joshi is most of the wrestling that's been running, but that's going to change soon. It looks like everybody's opening back up. But we got some stuff that's coming up soon. The first airing that we have listed here is the Tokyo Joshi Pro, which happened on March 21, and it's going to air on DDT Universe on March 24th. The big match from this show is Miyu Yamashita versus Natsumi Maki. They've been having a little series of matches. What, this is the fourth match in the series, I believe?
Yeah, I believe it's the third or the fourth, and Yamashita's won every match, so Maki is trying to get her first victory of the battle.
And then there is a 0-1 show that happened on February 24th, but it's going to air on Nikko Pro on March 26th. And it includes, 0-1 is not a Joshi promotion, but it does include Arisa Nakajima versus Yoshiko versus Asuka and the Blast Queen title match. We got Mayumi Ozaki and Saori Ano, who we talked about earlier, taking on Aja Kong and Hiroyo Matsumoto.
Yeah, that one's going to be really exciting if you've never seen a Blast title match. It does involve blasts, literal explosions in the match. Ozaki and Matsumoto had one at the big Oz Academy show last year, which was one of my top matches of the year for last year. So this one, it'll be a lot of fun. Definitely very different than a lot of other Joshi going on today.
And lastly, we've got a seedling show that happened on March 10th. It's airing on Nikko on March 27th. And I've really been looking forward to this Beyond the Sea title match. It's Arisa Nakajima taking on Rina Yamashita.
Yeah, this is going to be a big one, one that we definitely will discuss on the next episode of this podcast. A lot of things. Obviously, the show happened now almost 2 weeks ago, so sort of the spoilers are out there. A lot of things happened on this show that are going to set up probably the next few months of Seedlings stories, so there's going to be a lot to talk about and also probably some very good matches on the show.
Yeah, we'll try not to spoil the shows that haven't aired yet unless it's just too big of a news item to ignore, I think. I mean, that seems like the best way to approach it.
Yeah, I think so. Or if there's some show, you know, sometimes shows do air out of order. One show will make air and then the show that happened, you know, 5 days before. This happens a lot actually with like Sendai Girls will sometimes do this, where a show will make tape and then the show from the week before will make tape the week after, which is a bit weird. So, but yes, we will try our best to avoid any spoilers here on this podcast, just so you can go in with fresh eyes.
And then the upcoming shows that haven't even occurred yet, Seedling on March 23rd will be at Shinkiba First Ring. That's going to have The Best Friends versus Mimi Shimoda and Asuka, and Yoshiko Gun taking on Max Voltage.
So this is going to be the first show, as I mentioned, that Korakuen show for Seedling is setting up a lot of sort of what is coming up in the next little while, maybe the next few months for Seedling. And this is the first show where we're going to sort of see the new battle lines being drawn between the different wrestlers.
I don't know why I said gun there, obviously. Yoshiko Goon taking on Max Voltage. an ongoing story on this podcast will be pronunciations of things.
Your credibility is now shot.
I know. I just know some people turned this off after hearing me say that. Start on March 24th, the Cinderella tournament, which we talked about at the top of the show. Tokyo Joshi Pro on March 28th is going to be running a princess tag team title match with Rika Tatsumi and Miyu Watanabe taking on Maki Ito and Raku. So continuing this story with Raku teaming up with Maki Ito, getting her first win, and, you know, just moving to the side of Maki.
Yeah, it should be a good match. I think Rika and Miyu are a great team as well. So I'm definitely looking forward to this match. Should be fun to watch.
I've just kind of always enjoyed that you have the team or the whatever, the group of Miyu Watanabe, Raku. I wish I hadn't started saying all this because now I can't think of any of the words that I need to have to say. But the what's the name of their group? Matt SDL has turned off the show at this point, just to be clear.
Oh, the team names are not, that's not my specialty.
No, their group, their idol group, Up Up Girls.
Oh, Up Up Girls, yeah. I was like, I thought you meant Ito and Raku's team name, and I was like, yeah, the Up Up Girls. Yes.
I couldn't come up with that. But I love that the Up Up Girls just like wrestle each other all the time. It's just common.
It's all about competition.
It is. It is. That's the thread through all the podcasts I've ever done. Competition. Okay, Sendai Girls on March 28th will be running the rookie tournament that we previewed earlier. Ice Ribbon's going to be back at Corcoran Hall on March 29th. Whenever that airs, we will certainly talk about it. And the last match we got listed here for upcoming on March 30th, Marvelous will be running Shinkiba First String.
Exciting stuff.
Very exciting stuff. I mean, we probably could do this show weekly, to be honest, but it's just a lot of work and a lot of content. But it really packs up over 2 weeks of like the next stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, even, I was sort of finding, especially with the, there's Nico, there's Samurai, and then there's also the YouTube channels where a lot of promotions are dropping shows that aren't technically making tape on either of the actual, streaming services or TV outlets. So yeah, there's always a lot going on, and it's been sort of a break for a lot of the men's promotions in Japan, but hasn't been the same for the Joshi promotions.
All right, anything else that you think we need to talk about before we go, Taylor?
I think we about covered it all.
Okay, well, before we get out of here, I just want to remind everyone to follow us on Twitter at JBombAudio. We'd really appreciate that, and we will help to keep you updated on everything that's going on in the world of Joshi. You can find me at Aaron Like the Car. You can find Taylor at TAMAIMBO, MAIMBO. Make sure you're subscribing to the show, rating and reviewing. And as I said earlier, if you're feeling generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. So 2 weeks from now, we'll be back. We look forward to seeing you then. For Taylor, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next time.